Yeah, Andre, let's get started with what has happened to Scott Rader. It was so strange what has happened to him. He was going to St. Petersburg, and the State Department has seized his passport. I talked with him the other night, and he's gonna go to New York to participate in this forum remotely. But when it comes to this type of behavior on the part of the State Department, what's your opinion on this type of behavior, what they're seeking for, in your opinion?
Well, Scott has a story, history with such people as Joe Biden, for example, who obviously remembers him not very favorably because, and of course, people like Lindsey Graham. There are many people who do not like Scott in the high corridors of power in the United States, and they wanted to stick it to him. They wanted to send the message for others, or what is would be called dissidents, if you wish. But yeah, Scott probably somewhat correct when he said they wanted also to stick it to Russians. But primarily, it is to intimidate and to show that yeah, we have power. Go try to do something about it, something like that. So it is that's the only way they do it. But it is also, which is very interesting, it is the first sign of desperation and the panic when they reduce them and stoop so low as to go directly against the American Constitution, things which we here in the United States hold so dear. Especially Bill of Rights, this is one of the few things, in United States today, which still remain, normal about this country. Well, they got those guys, they just went and crossed this, thing. They don't care about Bill of Rights. They don't care about Constitution. So there you go.
And it's so amazing that because we had Larry Johnson, Larry just went to St. Petersburg without having any problem. But you think that they're doing this just to intimidate the other people that they're
Yeah,
gonna face?
it's definitely a message. Yeah, and plus, do not forget, Scott is very vocal about what the atrocity Israel commits in Gaza, and he knows the area fairly well. He also has good contacts and communications with people from Mossad, for example, and many people of the AIPAC, for example, they don't like him. So he has many enemies, as any man of integrity and honor will have. So it's like one, we're getting the flag, so that means we are over the target. So there you go. And Scott is that kind of the guy, yeah, American hero, and not only American hero. People in Russia admire him. So it's a complex political and ideological and metaphysical issue. Okay, let's put it this way. They
That's
cannot stop him from doing this
yeah.
again. Nobody, you know what? Yeah, it's absolute, shame. And United States is already losing pretty much most of its soft power. It's gonna be lost for a while, actually. And parading itself as the totalitarian state is just unbelievable. It's, what can I
Yeah.
say?
At the end of the day, they're calling them autocracies, and the United States is the only democracy on earth.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
laughing stock of a democracy, so to speak, anymore. So, yeah.
Let's talk about the new article in Foreign Policy. It says that Ukrainian forces urgently need a counteroffensive, need to go on offensive. It's so amazing how they're picturing the situation right now and how they're asking for a new offensive that we know that the last offensive on the part of Ukraine, how did that end up? And they're asking again, new counteroffensive. How do you see the situation right now? How capable is the Ukrainian army if they want to implement this plan on foreign policy in this article?
No, they will be trying. We already know that the streets are empty. They grab anybody and everybody who can they can get. They get into those centers, have about 2 days of the fitting the whatever uniform. Now, many people say that what they observe those brigades, they wear all, so some of them wear civilian clothes. There's no enough uniforms and things of this nature. So they are absolutely untrained, and they have 20 rounds to train the shooting at the range. I mean, this is preposterous, you know. It's so yeah, it's gonna be slaughter, and this is the last gasp, you know, of the first. You have to understand, take a political science environment and journalist environment and strategist environment and what have you in the United States. Those people are illiterate militarily. First, they leave, they confabulated their history, military history. And now you have whatever they are, including, you know, look at Mr. Petraeus or Ben Hodges or Keane or what have you. They paraded themselves as amateurs, which they are. They are. These are the guys who do not understand what real warfare is. And what can I say? Now, when you have the, I know what article you're talking about. I spoke about it today. What's his, Raj Menon or some, whatever his name. He is some professor of international relations in Georgetown. The guy needs to go back to freaking school. And I mean middle school to take a basic introductory level algebra and maybe some basic physics. These are illiterate people. They are ideologues and propagandists. They will not be able to hold the conversation with any real professional on any matters relating to the grand strategy. They love to talk about grand strategy, having no clue about what they're talking about. And so what he is trying to prod Ukrainians to do is to kill even more. If, as Mr. Putin today says, average they lose 50,000 a month today, just few hours ago he spoke about it. So average they lose 50,000 a month, 25,000 of those are irretrievable losses. So I mean, those people, again, you have to understand, they don't have their and even Wolfowitz, who wrote this Wolfowitz doctrine, despite having bachelor's degree in mathematics, those people have no idea what they're dealing with. And I mean it, they don't understand what the real war is. And maybe today some numbers produced by Mr. Putin can make a little bit of dent in their, you know, their morons. Most of them are, okay? So take any Harvard University or Georgetown, Yale, any kind of the Department of Political Science. These are the imbecile on imbecile who have no idea. Few people of such like esteemed and Michael Brenner, who really communicate and know their subject matter. The rest of them, they're morons. I mean, they know nothing about the world outside.
Actually, I talked with Michael Brenner. He's so wise. He knows everything.
Outstanding scholar. Outstanding scholar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is the disappearing generation of true American intellect, which I came to respect. But in the last 20 years, this whole thing just completely imploded on itself and it exposed the bunch of the nincompoops who run this country. They already ran it into the ground. United States, as we know, is over. We just now have to sit here and think what will come out on the other end, so to speak. You know, will we end up with the Civil War or with concentration camps? Who knows? You know, so, but United States, as we know it, is over.
Yeah, at the same time, we're hearing that the Ukrainian army, the training, the duration of training for the Ukrainian army for the new soldiers has reduced to 15 days. For anybody who has any sort of information about military service, knows this 15 days is nothing. They would learn nothing. And what they're doing, what the Zelensky administration is doing to these young men that they're sending to the battlefield is...
Oh, there's not only young, there are very many old men too, you know, so...
Yeah,
it's...
That would be, that's the crime against his people. That I don't know how we can call it. That's
pure and simple crime against humanity. He throws them into this Russian military machine, which is the best in the world in killing enemy. And he does it on the obviously being prodded by all his curators from Washington and London, who themselves never served a day. They never experienced danger. They have those fake military heroes, you know, who, I don't know, the guys, yeah, they went on patrol in Afghanistan. Oh my God, the IED exploded next to them. Dude, try to live for 20 days under the barrage of 155 millimeter, in Russian cases, 152 millimeter shells and having no ability to freaking go into the bushes to take number two, you know? So these people, they have no clue what they're talking about. These are the guys who sat on even FOB, forward operational basis. Wow, call in close air support and then be done for the day. And you are talking about people who have that type of military experience, and they come in and they decide to fight war against the power which for which and Russia, you have you have to understand, United States is not even the highest on the historical list of Russia who she defeated. She defeated people who militarily have a pedigree which United States can only dream about. And we can talk about the, obviously Hitler, we can talk about Napoleon, and we can talk about other people who left a huge mark on the Western civilization history, on the world history. And so we have now these guys who lost every single war they fought. They get their ass handed to them in Vietnam. They ran away from Afghanistan. They thought that they were beating their, you know, the third-rate military of Iraq. And they think that they can run the serious war. I mean, they learned their, obviously, tricks and shticks, you know, obviously from Hollywood, you know. And here we are. And this is a tragedy. Absolutely. I don't like, let's say, Ukrainehood in any way. I call on regime of Zelensky as a criminal regime. But, I mean, it doesn't mean that you have to kill people who are... They are brainwashed. I'm sorry for those Ukrainians. But, I mean, it is what it is. You know, it's either them or us, so to speak, situation. And Russians are really good at that, you know, and they are best in the world, in fact. So, and you look at this, it's war crime. It's crime against humanity. And this will be, when the everything's said and done, as I already stated, there will be many Western-sounding names which will be charged in absentia with the war crimes and crimes against humanity, including the political elite of the West.
Yeah. We had Hungarian foreign minister talking about NATO preparing to fight Russia. He was mentioning this. And at the same time, right after that, we had a new article in the Telegraph talking about NATO is developing a new plan to move US troops to Europe. When it comes to these type of rhetorics, we know that Hungarians, most probably, they know what's going on behind the scene more than us. How do you find the mindset of NATO right now?
Panic. I read this article. It's hilarious, especially the conclusion to which they arrived at the end of the article, and say, well, no matter what we do, we're still going to be screwed, you know? So, yeah, I mean, they think, oh, yeah, if they, you know, blow up Bremerhaven, you know, and, you know, ports in Netherlands, oh, yeah, we'll have to go to Southern Way. Okay, so what's the difference, you know? For Kinzhal or for Zircon, it's difference 1 minute. So it makes no difference whatsoever. And then, of course, you are talking about people who are utterly incompetent in the naval warfare. They don't understand what operations and interdictions of SLOC, shipping lanes of communications, is. And I wrote today about this in my blog. And yeah, it is hilarious. And then they say, they come up with this idea that, which is correct. I mean, we have only 5%, you know, required air defense. No, you don't even have those 5%, because that air defense, which is used, it will be basically depleted if Russia decides to blow up, you know, concentration. And the first point of concentration of the force is the port. This is granted if you are able to ship it from the eastern seaboard of the United States to over Atlantic. And last time I checked, and I spoke to my classmates, Russia has a darn good submarine forces, you know, which are carrying their weapons which no other navy has. And so if they want to go and do the, as they call, the third battle for the Atlantic, sure, it might happen, but it's not going to end up well. And this is just, how to put it politely, this is projection. And I already spoke about this earlier today. I can tell you also that some people in Russia, and I'm talking about high-level people, level of the State Duma, not without justification, say that Well, probably they are trying to do their play to playing in brinksmanship, you know, creating this hysteria and bring it to verbally to the level of their human missile crisis 2.0. And then, you know, considering the fact what is happening with Biden's polls and his aspirations to be reelected, I mean, if the United States reelects him, you know, I'm not voting for him, but, you know, and guess what? Then he suddenly appears and resolves this crisis as the great peacemaker, which, of course, removes all Trump, you know, ideas and publicity away from the focus of public opinion. And here we are. We have, you know, great Joe Biden who saved the world. You know, you can sell this BS, obviously, and Americans who will be scared crapless, let's put it this way, they will vote for him. That's the idea, pretty much. Militarily, military and intelligence professionals, they don't go with rhetoric only. They go with the numbers. They go with the composition and the size of the force. NATO doesn't has neither composition nor required force, let alone that technologically, as I stressed it, ad nauseam, and I will continue to stress it, it's all the time. The United States Army is stuck in 1990s. This is TOE, Table of Organization and Equipment, of the force which was conceived, you know, for the fight with in 90s. For some force like, you know, incompetent, I mean, undertrained, semi-literate Iraq. That's pretty much what it was. And so now they want to take on the nuclear superpower with the best fighting army in the world. Good luck with that. And again, that's dangerous because obviously there will be a catastrophe for NATO forces if they even decide to appear anywhere near, let's say, those sanitary zones which Russia will be establishing.
Yeah, to understand the mindset in the West recently, the head of defense of the United Kingdom was talking with Sky News. He said Putin doesn't want a war with NATO. Putin doesn't want a nuclear war. And I totally agree with what he's saying in these two sentences.
Nobody wants the war.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the end, what comes next is so problematic because he says we have enormous overmatch because of the strength of NATO. You know, there he's imagining Putin the way that Putin is afraid of having a war with NATO. Putin is afraid of having a nuclear war. This is dangerous in their view. I totally agree that Putin doesn't want. He said various times that he's not
Russians
gonna
are not afraid of NATO.
Gonna...
And I know. Yeah, Sir Radakin, he's a clown. I mean, he's a clown ahead of the clownish force, which is the United Kingdom Armed Forces. And again, I'm going to quote again, Mr. McGregor, Lilliputian force. So you have this chihuahua, you know, jumping, you know, up and down and pretending that they have overmatched. The guy doesn't even, does he understand what he's saying? I think so. He's not completely stupid, although, of course, the decades of inbreeding with, you know, inside this, you know, British elite might have dampened his intellectual capabilities, but he is in no position. I read what they are writing for decades. They're delusional. They have delusions of grandeur, but the point is Radakin is nobody. I mean, all decisions are made actually in Washington, D.C. And if we go and look at, obviously, United States Army and United States forces, they dwarf those people from United Kingdom. It's not even funny, okay? So when you have this guy, Tabaki, essentially, you know, from Rudyard Kipling, you know, Jungle Stories, you remember this Tabaki was running in between the legs of Shere Khan. That's exactly what it is. Radakin is Tabaki running in whatever the name of the guy now, Joint Chief of Staff, I don't remember. Not that it makes any much difference, but again, listen, when the guy who literally tries to, you know, race Formula One on his trike, on his tricycle, you know, from the kindergarten, is just ridiculous. And he parades himself a clown that he is, you know. So,
yeah, the problem is, if you remember, Putin once was talking about nuclear bombs. He said that we are not going to be the first who's launching nuclear bomb. but we're not going to be the second. This is a pretty clear message for the West, in my opinion. And Andre, the problem is here that before this conflict in Ukraine started, they were talking the same way, pretty the same way, that the way that Putin is afraid of going into Ukraine, because Ukraine will crush Russia. You remember the rhetoric in those days? They really thought that Ukraine can do huge damage to Russia.
Well, as I already stated, the intelligence they receive on Russia is provided by imbeciles, essentially, and dissidents. Look at Washington, D.C., and you know what? You throw the stone, you'll hit some, you know, fanatic Russophobe like Julia Ioffe, or, you know, Rebecca Kofler, or Max Boot, you know, those people who pretend that they are serious intelligence professionals. They are nobodies. They have no background. They don't understand what real economy is. They don't understand Russian history. They are here in the United States to spite Russia. Okay, and so they live there with fantasy, and they are obviously very little positive has to be stated on number of the immigrants who contributed to this sheer idiocy which United States had about Russia. And this didn't start yesterday. It all started during World War II. And our example today, people don't forget, you know, they forgot. The United States is completely oblivious, population mostly, about the fact that actually tomorrow will be celebration of the D-Day, you know. What many people do not understand, D-Day wouldn't have happened if not the consultations of allies with Red Army, with Stalin in 1943, which was the final decision was made during Tehran conference in November 43. And that Russians, you know, said, yes, we're going to attack, you know, once you begin to the landing, we're going to attack, thus drawing, you know, German forces away from the Western Front, you know, theater of operations. And that's what Russians did. They launched into 22nd of June Operation Bagration, which completely demolished everything. I mean, Army Group Center, 500,000 of Germans through German Wehrmacht basically written off, and enormous amount of the equipment. It was larger in size than Stalingrad, you know. So, and it was largest offensive operation in the history. And already then they started making doubts, you know, doubting that what Russians were saying. So that is why in July, Stalin ordered parades of the captured Germans. There were 57,000 of them marched in Moscow for public to see. Then there were about other 50 plus thousand marched in Minsk and Kiev. So, and that was to demonstrate, not to Soviet population, which of course was privy to this, and it all made their, you know, documentary reels. It was to demonstrate to Western allies that, guys, you better face the reality of the scale and scope of the operations on the Eastern Front before you begin to doubt. Well, guess what? Since 1940s, they are rewriting the history of the World War II. So there you go. What are you going to learn when your whole history is confabulated or written by the Wehrmacht and SS generals, which United States imported in, you know, industrial quantities, and they just, you know, trained them, so to speak. Ask Douglas McGregor if he will ever agree to talk about it. He was influenced by Germans and Wehrmacht and Bundeswehr. And he bought, you know, and he swallowed hook, line, and sinker all those fairy tales and mythology which they were, you know, providing for the United States. In United States field manuals, its strategic concepts, offensive concepts, have been shaped by Wehrmacht generals. And that's what it is. So guess what? You're probably not going to learn much from the guys who lost the war catastrophically. And Red Army ended up in Berlin. Yet here we are. They learned from wrong people, let me tell you.
We've learned that Biden is officially allowing Ukrainians to attack, to use the weapons of NATO and United States and attack Russia directly and inside Russia. And there is an article in CNN that it says the military analysts in CNN, they're talking about these type of actions. There would be no outcome if they do this. Why? Even the analysts in CNN, they're believing that there is no outcome for these type of actions. But when it comes to the Biden administration and this decision, in your opinion, why they're seeking for, by officially announcing that they're allowing Ukrainians to attack Russia inside Russia, if there would be no outcome, no game changer in this type of behavior?
PR. PR, they need to panic and desperation. They're recycling same old again. You remember, yeah, it's just Russians have been catching their Storm Shadow and Scouts and Attackums over Russian cities since October 2023, nonstop. I mean, every day there's some shooting down HIMARS, they're shooting down Attackums, they're shooting down Scouts and all that. So yeah, what's the news? The news are United States elite being absolutely useless, having no useful skills in life, be that fighting the war or run their serious economic programs and things of this nature. The only thing they can do is PR. That's the only way it is, because the whole thing is tied to actually donor class and their necessity to be reelected. So considering the fact that today there are another 1,700 of Ukrainians are killed and wounded, by Russians. So what's left? And they understand that NATO is defeated. Because if they want to try the war, sure, let them try it. You see what's going to happen. They have only PR. They need to recycle those statements, how to put it politely, grandiose statement, we allowed, okay, yeah, sure. It's been happening now for 8 months. So yeah, what's the news? And the news are strictly for domestic consumption, period. So, and Russians are already openly today again. One of their deputy foreign ministers came out again and said, "What's the news? They've been doing this like forever, So, and it's like, to keep people of the United States in, how to say it, in a proper shape, to have them excited and go vote for Biden and Democratic Party on, And that's pretty much it. There's nothing more to it.
Yeah. Forbes reported that they're calling Russian KAB bombs a marvelous weapon that the Ukrainians are practically unable to resist. When they're talking about the Ukrainians, we have to consider that they're talking about NATO. When you compare the offensive and the defensive, it seems that the offensive is way ahead of defensive. Is that the case for any type of army?
Well, no, for any type. Russia has, I know many people will cringe like, no, Russia has the best air defense in the world. And we know the efficiency is outstanding. Of course, it gets through once in a while, things of this nature, like missile here and there. It's called leakers. You cannot intercept 100% of everything. In terms of the air defense of the combined West, it's pathetic, honestly. And it's not designed, for example, if you want to launch their, gliding bomb with UMPK, which is called the module of their those bombs, you launch it from the 70 kilometers away. Theoretically, PAC-3 Patriot and SMTP, I believe, there is another similar, somewhat complex for French. They can theoretically intercept it because you have to launch it to have the elevation that you will be seen by the radar, and theoretically they can launch and shoot you down. But the problem for them is they cannot even operate properly because Russia produces the largest number of the what is called loitering munition, all of it terrifying. For example, like Lancets, and now Lancets can fly to way beyond 100 kilometers. And what does it mean that once you turn on your radar, guess what? You immediately betray your position and you immediately will provide the enemy, in this particular case, Russians, with the, well, basically the targeting. And so it's not going to be just the plane which is going to be launching some kind of the gliding bomb. You will be getting something which will fly in really fast after that. So that is why practically they have no ability to be, stay like Russians do. They do maintain, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, a solid radar field, which is operational 24/7. Sometimes, depending on the circumstances, and you know, things do break. Sometimes Ukrainians get lucky once in a while, like they hit some radar station or somewhere. So you have to basically substitute it, and in this case, you lose the efficiency or coverage, so to speak, of your radar field. But it is there. It is always there. That is why, for example, United States hiding behind Ukrainians, they provide their targeting against Russian air defense systems for them, because they see it from their both from the air and from the, from space. And but you cannot do the same in Ukraine, because the moment you turn on your radar, there is a lot of stuff which flies in. Okay, and there is another this funny. Very interesting missile, which is called KH-31, and this is much better equivalent. Let's put it this way: way better, longer, much faster than HARM, high-speed anti-radiation missile. And they proved to be extremely effective. They fly up to 200 kilometers, and so then, of course, you fly the thing which depletes your package, defensive package, which are, of course, all those geranium drones and things of this nature. So when you look at this, it's like, yeah, sure, they might get lucky once in a while. But again, today, even in the same article, which you mentioned about from the Telegraph, they talk about that we have about 5% of the required air defense. Yeah. And even those 5% are not good enough, you know, so it's just the way it is.
Yeah. The German Pistorius, the German defense minister, is talking about, he's saying that Germany should be ready for war with Russia by 2029. The problem would be for Germany, how they gonna produce weapons, because they are right now, they're so dependent on China and the United States. Porsche is producing its car in the United States. We have the other companies totally dependent on China. At the same time, they're talking about fighting Russia by 2029. In the first place, why they're thinking this way? Russia has not been threatening them during this conflict. And why the German mindset is going this way, in your opinion?
Well, the humiliation of defeat by the Red Army, with the exception of the people of the former GDR, but in the Western West Germany, they never got rid of it. It was exacerbated by the complete emasculation of the German nation by the United States, which never left. Essentially, Germany is an occupied country. It is completely emasculated, and now it's going to be actually completely deindustrialized. And these are attempts to pretend that Germany matters. It doesn't anymore. And, you know, economically, it's much smaller than Russia. So I don't know what they're talking about. So they want to, you know, thump their chest. The Bundeswehr is a joke. Luftwaffe is a joke. Everything about Germany is becoming a joke, you know? So they better concentrate on holding, you know, things like Eurovision 2024. That's good for them, you know? That's what Germany is today, you know? So, and what can I say? Sure, they want to try. As Russians say, we can repeat. You know, but this time, it's not going to be full. The Europe of times of Hitler and the Europe of today are not the same, you know. So, and what can I say?
Yeah, but when they're talking about 2029 fighting Russia, the message that comes out of this type of mindset would be that they want to continue this war in Ukraine, and as the it's so dangerous, this mindset, and I don't know how Russia is going to manage that, because if in my opinion, we know the mindset in Iraq, in Afghanistan. They stayed there for such a long time. They did nothing. They destroyed everything. And right now, it seems the plan would be the same in Ukraine. And as much as Russia is concerned, do you think Putin would let them to continue this war up until 2029?
No, it's the date is pulled out of their ass, and it's in accordance to modus operandi of this proverbial Middle Eastern wise man who told Sheikh that he can teach their donkey speak human language. And when they ask him, "What the hell are you doing, dude? I mean, he's gonna execute you, if you don't deliver." He said, "No. By that time, it's either the donkey will die or the sheikh. So there will be no." That's what it is. That's their planning. They don't have planning. The German, as I already stated, military is a joke. Bundeswehr is a joke, and I don't think many German people, except for those, nut jobs with their, such as Annalena Baerbock and all those, illiterate imbeciles, and many of them having their, how to put it politely, bloodline going back to many Wehrmacht and even SS officers, So they have this issue, they have this situation when they have to kind of face the reality of that Germany has been conquered by the Red Army. But now then, 2029, why not 2031? I don't know. But it was absolutely, just pulling out of the ass any number, because as this proverbial sheikh or donkey, one of them will die at some point of time. By the time those people will get out of the politics, it won't matter. You can promise anything you want. But Germany is being deindustrialized. It's going to be the Molotov plan. Germany cannot exist without Russian energy by being the industrial power. Once Russian energy is removed, which happened, it's just a matter, just start, ladies and gentlemen, start your stopwatches and see when Germany turns into, well, it's already turning pretty much into the crap hole, and it's going to be bad, So they can think they're big master, the United States.
Yeah, the other thing that has happened, considering NATO, was the new position of Turkey. They're talking about since 1999, they wanted to be part of the EU, European Union. Right now, they're talking about BRICS. And before talking about BRICS, they were talking about if NATO wants to confront Russia, they're not going to be there. They're not going to be part of NATO confronting Russia directly. And right now they're talking about they want to be part of BRICS. And at the same time, I talked with Colonel Larry Wilkerson. He said that the ground forces of Turkey is the most important and powerful and
Yes.
strong, the most
It's the
strong
largest
are
army
the
in the
largest
NATO.
army, ground army within NATO.
Yes, it is.
And if they do that, if they're not willing to fight Russia, what does it mean? What does it mean? How do you see the future of Turkey, considering vis-a-vis their position, their attitude, this new attitude on their part?
Erdogan is a very shrewd guy. He's by no means stupid. I mean, he might not have all principles and integrity, but he surely is not stupid. He knows where the wind is blowing. Turkey was integrating with Russia economically now for a long time, actually. You go to Russia, there's truckload of the construction sites where Turks are working. Russia is building Turkey one nuclear station. Now they talk about the second one. They obviously part of their gas hub, now them, and of course this very, very sensitive issue of Turkey having S-400, and they thinking about how they can get their hands on Su-35s fighter jets. Or maybe Su-57s, or maybe Su-75s, depending on the circumstances. So, yeah, I mean, the future economically is obviously not in the West. Europe is just merely the appendage to, this peninsula to the gigantic Eurasian landmass, which is the heartland, as those geopolitics, so to speak, love to talk about. And all activity and biggest, largest economies are there, you know. So, and Turks are not stupid. Plus, I mean, there is a very good general public opinion and disposition towards Russia in Turkey, very, very positive. And of course, hey, Russian money, Turkey remains a huge tourist hub for Russians. Huge. And I believe at some point of time, Russians were providing like the third of the income for the tourist industry in Turkey. You will go into many, shore cities in Turkey where they have resorts and all that. You will see many signs in Russian, you know, so on the restaurants and things of this nature. So it's just, it's kind of natural, you know. So, and yeah, Turkey should understand, and they understand that their future lies with Eurasia. And Eurasia is BRICS, obviously. And yes, the announcement was made on the level of the foreign ministry of Turkey, and Russian foreign ministry reacted and said, we applaud this decision. Yeah, Turkey is important. It's a large economy. It's a large economy. It might be not very functional right now, but it's a large, it's by no means third world economy. They produce more steel than every single G7, nation, so with the exception of the United States. So, and yeah, they are, this is a big country.
Yeah. Yeah. Lloyd Austin was asked if the United States planned to create an alliance system similar to NATO in the Asia-Pacific region. He said that's positive, that we're going to... Do you know what they're doing there, what they want to do there? When he talks about this new, it's something like NATO in Asia-Pacific, what he's talking about, in your opinion?
Oh, it existed, you know what, ANZAC and ZEUS, whatever the hell the names of those, alliances, it existed before. So it's not like something new. So yeah, that's what United States does. It places a bunch of the bases around the world, inviting their modern weapons to strike them, having no ability to defend them, create some kind of, you know, alliances. It's all diplomatic games from the 20th century when it had any, you know, it mattered somewhat. Today, it really doesn't matter, you know. So it's, it doesn't matter in a sense that, yeah, they will try to provoke China. They will need the Tonkin Gulf 2.0, something like that. But again, what can they do? United States is a naval power, and its navy right now in a very rough shape. It's not ready to fight modern navies, you know, and especially modern navies which are really tied to the littoral and have the advanced standoff weapons. So what they do, they're going to surround China with all those. Well, if you look attentively at what they can do, Philippines, it's economic ruin. Militarily, it's, you know, non an entity. Its navy, it's a joke. It's good navy to start the Tonkin Gulf 2.0 resolution, you know, to sink a couple of their remaining ships and say, hey, China, you know, sunk us, let's go, you know. And United States is tied with the Philippines, you know, with their mutual defense treaty. Other than that, a lot of talk, a lot of chest thumping. They want China to attack Taiwan, you know, so they need it, you know. They need to have this, you know, casus belli, so to speak. Other than that, it's all joke.
Do we know why in the world Zelensky went to Philippines, and he was suggesting that Putin's next target is the Philippines? What was the main goal of this visit?
There is a good cocaine, I heard, in Philippines, you know, so there is a good powder, and evidently he got high on it, you know, so that's the only reason I can explain it. So, and other than that, I have no, this is a rational behavior of the man. Who knows, he's going to be killed, or he will be killed one way or another, because there are many Ukrainian people who would love to settle accounts with him, who lost, for example, their family members, many of them, you know. So he will be hunted till the end of his days, and he eventually will be found out and he will be killed. So that's probably what it is. And he behaves irrationally. So does, for example, United States. You know, they are in panic, they're in desperation. And evidently, only recently, Zelensky started to figure out that whatever he was told about the fight in the special military operation was primarily confabulation and wet dreams. He was never reported the real, actually, situation on the front. So, what can I say? It's all reeks of the last days of Third Reich, you know. So, and Third Reich not being Ukraine. Ukraine is just the tool. It's the NATO, you know, and American, what is it, Pax Americana, which is crumbling in the front of our eyes, you know. The whole edifice went down.
Because we know that right after inauguration of Putin, he went to China. And Zelensky, in his first visit after the extension of his term under the martial law, he went to Philippines. If they're doing a political game there, it's so unbelievably nonsense.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much it's out of the same tune, so to speak, like taking away, essentially stealing Scott's passport. So desperation, panic, stooping low to, you know, reducing yourself to that type of actions. And yeah, Zelensky thinks he's equal to Putin, you know, and Z. Yeah. So, and I mean, it's circus, honestly. Sometimes I just have no words to comment on that. It's this is what it became, you know. It's the country I immigrated to, United States in 1990s, you know, mid-90s. There's no there. This country doesn't exist anymore. It's just something else altogether. I just don't recognize the United States. It's like you know, get up in the morning, you read news and like, holy moly. And when you think that, you know, you couldn't get any lower than that and you hit the bottom, somebody begins to knock from the below. It's like, good God, unbelievable. It is historic. It is historic. It's, you know, and as Marx stated, you know, history repeats itself first as a tragedy, then as a farce, you know. So we have a farce right now, granted with the huge human tragedy in Ukraine. But, you know, you look at the combined West, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. The Chinese Ministry of Defense, he says that the China's army is ready to defend justice in the world together with the Russian army. This is the new face of this new world that they're building together. And when they're talking about justice, do you think they're talking about Middle East? They're talking about Africa? They're talking about all of these regions? What's your take on this comment?
Taiwan primarily, albeit I would say China definitely has a huge stake in Africa, but it's Taiwan primarily. And this is the statement insofar as the Russian participation, possible participation in defense or taking of Taiwan, depending on the circumstances, how United States will be able to create their this casus belli, you know, by placing troops in Taiwan or crossing this line of not recognizing Taiwan anymore as the part of China, despite the fact that they continue to say that it is. And in this case, yeah, it's like make sure that, oh yeah, Russians are on board with that. Russians definitely will be providing targeting, all intelligence, probably some very advanced weaponry and things of this nature. Russia is not going to fight this, but Russia will provide a strategic, basically, cover for China. And this is the part of this, you know. And will China at some point of time, for example, place troops in any significance in Africa? Totally possible. I cannot, you know, discount this possibility, especially since Russia returned with a vengeance to Sahel, you know, to Africa. And so that could be the case too. And of course, in the overall, what you touched upon earlier with all those alliances United States is doing, well, China will be facing them off, you know, and Philippines, for example, you know.
Andre, just to wrap up this session, do you think that the center of gravity of powers, of economic powers, of military powers, is shifting from the West to the East?
It already did. It's already did. Economically, when you look at France or, you know, United Kingdom, God forbid, so Italy, they are second tier powers. They still have something, for example, as a about United Kingdom. The most important part they have are Rolls-Royce. This is a strategic industry which they still able to maintain because it produces turbines and jet engines, you know, the engines for their civilian commercial aviation. That is important, of course. But if you begin to look at it overall, Germany, okay, they have Siemens, they have Siemens. Siemens will go bananas, you know, or probably down the drain eventually at some point of time. So, and how to put it politely, yeah, that's about it. And Japan without resources, its longevity, so to speak, staying power will be counted in months or maybe two. After that, it will disintegrate economically. So the only power which remains, and even that is being deindustrialized and completely, basically demolished, is the United States. Period. Europe doesn't matter. They are nobodies. They try to pretend that they mean something, but you know, after the you know, especially solution decision of the judge in Spain, that yeah, it's okay to screw you know 12-year-old kids. It's their national tradition. So there you go. You need to erect their you know basically their Iron Curtain, you know, for Russia, for example. These are not normal people. So and. Will they recover? I don't think so. They will ever reach what they used to be. But then again, we look at the historical time. We look at the historic time, longevity. So in historic terms, Europe was killed in World War II. All of it was completely finished off because they collaborated in with Nazism, all of them. And so what can I say? Now it's the arrangement time, but militarily, technologically, economically, the center of gravity right now in Eurasia. And primarily it's between Russia and China. So, and can I say?
Yeah.
Don't forget India. Indians are doing some their own thing, but when and how, I don't know. But they certainly have potential. I mean, they are a very large country, obviously. Very poor, no doubt about it. But if they will manage to, you know, pull it off what China did by pulling half a billion people out of, you know, misery and out of poverty, that would be their achievement, you know, which will only be, match, you know, what China did to its own population in the last 20 years.
It seems that the same behavior, the India's behavior is so similar to what we've been witnessing from Erdogan in Turkey. They're looking at where is the power, where are they gonna get more?
It's that's how India behaves, right? They are their own thing. Russians are not complaining. Yeah, they know there are all kinds of difficulties, for example, with dealing with them. But well, generally speaking, it's fine. They've been friendly countries, you know. So and you know, it's India. You know, they're, as I already stated, it's a huge, unique civilization. You know, so they go their own way. I mean, there are no friendships really in geopolitics for you know on the power structure. There are only you know coinciding interests, you know, that sure. And India is doing the thing she thinks is good for India, and nobody can prevent them from doing that.
I think I love the way that Russia and China are calling their relationship, they're calling partnership, they're not calling it alliance.
That's yeah, they don't want to be tied, yes.
Yeah.
We don't want to be tied with any kind of, you know, formal treaties and things like that. No, it's partnership. Yeah. Plus, it's the longest ground border in the world between the two countries. They're neighbors. China and Russia are neighbors.